drinking a glass of 1792.
I'm drinking a bottle of Tecate.
This is in honor of Boston College average attendance. Hey everybody, welcome to the Adirondack Podcast. I'm Tyler Wilkinson. We're back with an NCAA tournament edition. We have our full staff. We have our staff writers, Megan Bard.
Hello.
And Peter Bard.
What's up?
And Russ Steinberg.
Hello.
And as always, our podcast producer, Alex Cohen. Alex, what do we got today?
Hello, hello. Okay, so today we're going to start off with the AAC tournament. Specifically, we're going to start off with the shot from Roxbury from Mr. Jalen Adams.
First of all, veto on the shot from Roxbury as the name. That's dorky. I don't care if Shabazz Napier said it.
Well, I do. Well, I for one do care if Shabazz Napier said it.
I think we just call it Cash. Nothing else. Cash.
I think I like Cash.
If I have to vote, I'm voting for Cash.
Cash Adams, yo. Love it.
Like all right, I like Cash Adams. That sounds good.
You guys are stifling.
No, it's supposed to sound like Smash Adams, Doug Funny's secret agent alter ego on Doug.
I think it's like Patch Adams because Jalen Adams looks a lot like Robin Williams.
You guys are stifling the creativity of the person who came up with Jean-Claude Dan Ham. I'm just saying. All right, so let's get into the shot. Let's talk about it a little bit because I'll just describe.
Shot part two.
I'll just describe. Where I was sitting in my office. I'm watching the game on my phone, and Cincinnati hits the three with 0.8 left, and my heart sinks, and I'm just like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, not again!"
Yeah, the season's over.
I have that empty, numb feeling. I can feel like my teeth start hurting. Like it's just a.
rising in your.
I absolutely understand this 100%. Like everything you're saying, like yep.
Yeah, like it was
you went
just
through all of the five stages of grief in like 1 second. I remember I was taking my headphones off because I was also at work. Taking my headphones off and like dismissively throwing them, like exhausted, just like dead inside, just like ugh.
And then
he hits the shot. And I go, what the fuck?
Well, like, actually, no. There's more to this because. Jalen Adams hurls up the shot, and Mike Patrick annoyingly says, "Good if it goes." And I was like, "Fuck you, Mike Patrick." And then it goes in, and people criticized Len Elmore for saying, "Are you kidding me?" But that there's no other reaction to that. There's just
I have no problem with "Are you kidding
are
me?"
"Are you kidding me?" is fine. I was, you know, Len Elmore is many things, but that was fine. That I was good with that.
I was so exhausted, like emotionally spent by that point. I mean, we were three overtimes in, and like, I don't know how many of you guys actually stayed up to watch all fucking six overtimes of that Syracuse game, but I did, man. I did.
All of us were up for that, right?
I'm not 90 years old.
The basketball gods, man, they owed us one. I was like, this one has to come out our way. But then that shot...
The basketball gods owe us shit. watched that video, right, of improbable shots winning huge games for us.
If anything...
We have been the most horseshoe-in-the-ass fan base in the history of sports.
Just to go
with the exception of the Red Sox.
That many overtimes and have your heart broken, like, that was awful. That was gut-wrenching. And, you know, it was
on the other hand,
out our way.
On the other hand, we had Kemba and we had Shabazz.
That's true.
No other team. Like, you should hear the way other teams' fans talk about us. Like, it's just like, God fucking, now UConn can't be beat again. Like, it's just a thing that happens.
Don't you love it?
UConn goes into god mode for like a month and a half and just skull fucks everybody for a while.
So last week I was with Roger Sherman from SB Nation. The two of us were covering the Big East and Atlantic 10 tournaments. And he had a good tweet after that shot, which was basically, UConn is just doomed to be a mediocre basketball team that wins the national championship every few years.
And I'm fine with that.
I'm fine with that.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
All day, every day. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's like the thing with KO. The whole point of these end of the year tournaments is you need to be playing the best basketball of your season at this time. You have to peak at the right time. So, like, it's cool that you were good in December, but if you're not as good as us now, like, I don't give a fuck.
Let me ask a question to the group, though. one of the big things that everybody talked about in the aftermath of the shot was historical significance. Obviously, if you look at the Onions video, there's a lot of shots with historical significance in UConn history. But let's imagine for a second that this team makes a Sweet 16 run, okay? What significance does this shot have? Where does it rank in UConn history?
No question, it's top five. I think it's tough to do something like that because there's so many criteria you can use. Like, does a big shot on the way to winning a national championship matter more than one that in a season that didn't end in a national championship? Like,
and then, like, there's the degree of difficulty. That's a three-quarter length shot with less than a second on the clock. Like, that's bananas.
But by a star local point guard in his coming out party, like, there's just so much about this game that's just, like, this is, you knew instantly, we're going to be talking about this for a long time. I'm going to tell my kids about this game.
It was a great game, even other than the refs trying to make it terrible for everyone. It was a great basketball game.
It was that pretty was much consensus. Really, it was pretty much consensus among most pundits that it was better than the Oklahoma-Kansas game.
It was up there with that. It was definitely better than the six overtime game. And I'm not just talking about that because of the result. That was not in a very well-played game.
Well, especially somebody was talking about this, that how many overtimes ended in that game with someone missing a shot as opposed to with some insane shit happening, like is what happened in this one.
Right. Well, I mean, Jalen Adams hit a shot at the end of the second overtime as well. There was several key end of overtime or regulation. Brenna had that huge block. That
block at the end of regulation.
Holy shit.
We have a Mecca Okafor against Villanova. Yep.
Right.
Just, and you watch him. Last couple of games, there's been a couple of plays each game where, like, you see he's reading the block, like, 2-3 seconds ahead. He's like, and he's just, like, in the position, gets ready. The guy goes exactly where he thinks he's going to, and he swats the shit out of it. I can't remember what it was. I think it was in on another point in the Cincinnati game where one of their big men was beating Miller inside, and Brian just kind of stands and waits, and then right as the guy goes up, he just swats the shit out of it. And it's like, he's reading the offense so well right now. His positioning on rebounding is great. He's boxing out. He's turned into this complete defensive player, and he's been great on putbacks. He's doing so many things well right now.
His hands seem to be working a lot better. That first couple of weeks he was back, it was clear his hands weren't all the way back, but certainly in the tournament, he looked like his hands were functioning properly.
So,
like, I don't know how his numbers are going to look, but he's been playing incredibly well. If he keeps playing like that, we're going to have a really good run right here. I mean, he's been dominating the game on the defensive end.
He's just got to
Hamilton, Brima, and Adams all probably had their three best games of the season consecutively this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Brima's just got to stay in the game. Like, he's got to stay out of foul trouble. Same
he
thing
three
was
three fouls in a 60-minute game. That was incredible.
Of course, that was fantastic. But we all know
that was that was almost as unlikely as Adam's shot.
That's true, but we have to remember that it's foul trouble is typical with him. And if we're gonna go up against some tough teams here, going our road is not easy at all. We have a tough game in the first round against Colorado. We have probably the toughest game in the tournament in the second round. And then it doesn't get much better from there. We need to figure out how to keep him and Sean Miller on the court.
I'm more concerned with Miller than Brime at this point, staying on the court.
But you made a good point, Tyler, in our Slack about Miller, that he's getting away from AAC refs.
I mean, Miller has been the most disrespected player I can ever remember in UConn history. I mean, you've had guys get cheap fouls before. I know Jake Boskal is probably going to be the first one on everyone's mind. But Jake earned a lot of those fouls, too. And he earned them in the Big East when everyone was just beating the shit out of each other in the late 90s. Sean Miller...
Oh, the nice time.
Sean Miller gets no foul calls on offense when he legitimately is fouled all the time. And he gets called for every single cheap foul on defense. And so my point was, just generally, that, you know, he's not going to be playing in front of these same referees that have basically been showing him no regard all season. They might actually play to his advantage, especially against Colorado's a pretty physical team in their own right. I think I think a physical game, because of UConn's defense, actually benefits UConn, especially if they can use it to keep their big guys on the floor.
Like against Temple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a good point.
When he had one foul in the whole game.
Right. So let's use that as a segue. Let's start to talk about the rest of the tournament, and I'll just speak for myself and say after that four overtime game, I was personally drained. I was almost watching the next two games in a catatonic state. I don't know about you guys. How about you all start talking about that?
After Adams hit that shot, it actually even took me a while to remember there had to be another overtime. I was just done at that point. But then once they actually won the game, I just had that feeling like the one I had after Kemba hit the shot against Pitt that we're going to win this tournament. I felt good about a third shot at Temple because UConn kind of threw away those first two games. They had a renewed confidence after knocking off Cincinnati. Felt good about that game. Saw that Houston and Tulsa both went down in the quarterfinals. It just seemed like everything opened up for them right there.
I definitely thought Memphis was the biggest threat to us. I thought we will bury Tulsa or Houston if we see them again, just because they don't have anywhere near the talent to match up with us. Memphis has good players. Like, they're a shit show, but they have good people on the team.
Shaq Goodwin's a good player. I mean,
that's the thing. He scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, he's a really good player. He gets a lot of whistles, both on offense and defense. But he's an incredible troll. I mean, the game at Gamble when we played them, I remember Sterling Gibbs, his friends and family were at the game and they were taunting Shaq the whole game. And Shaq at one point made video game hands at them, and it was like there could be no response to that. He was a pretty effective troll, but
he kind of makes me wish that Memphis had been in the real Big East.
Yeah,
because he's the kind of guy, he should have been a Big East player.
You'd love to hate him, you know, like
he should have been a Big East player. Troy Copain should have been a Big East player.
Yeah,
like those guys were perfect Big East villains. I fucking hate those guys, and they always fuck us up.
So Peter, we were talking about this game, and I know that we're back on this game again, but we were talking about this game, and you said in terms of legacy, this could be known as the Jalen Adams game. And it's not. And here's the thing: it's not just because of that shot. It's also because he hit the circus layup to save the second overtime. He hit that shot, and then he sunk four straight free throws to ice the game at the end. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, for a freshman to come in and sink.
It became Daniel Hamilton. Inbound the ball to me, I'm going to take the shot because I'm the one who should take the shot because you guys all passed on the opportunity to take over this team. I'm going to.
And isn't that what we've been looking for all fucking year?
Yep.
Yeah.
I want to do that.
Yeah. It's for him to turn into Kalin.
I didn't think it would be the freshman, but there you go.
I knew. I saw it. I love this kid, man. This was his coming out party. It was fantastic. It was the most fun. It was exactly what we were hoping for the whole time, was that Sterling Gibbs gets to move off the ball. Now you got him and Purvis both hitting their shots, which is fantastic. And finally, Purvis is starting again, actually like scoring points early in the game. It's shocking what happens when you actually put him in the starting lineup. And Jalen Adams, and then even Daniel Hamilton. They're running the offense through Hamilton now. Everything's looking real nice. It's all running exactly how we wanted it to run at this point. It just took all fucking season to figure it out.
I will say, and part of what I question about that, because obviously you look at it now and you say, wow, this looks so obvious. This is what they should have been doing all the time. But Hamilton was really bad for a good 2 weeks, especially when Brima was out. Adams struggled. He didn't hit a three-pointer for like 2 months.
He,
you know what I mean? Like, he was clearly not ready. So you just wonder, like, what they could have done differently, if anything. Or if it just turns out that they just happen to all hit their stride and coalesce at the exact right time. I think it
played off each other.
Yeah.
I think Adams taking a more aggressive role in the offense helped Hamilton. I think you see Adams is drawing the primary defender now. Hamilton's getting a regular wing. They're not keying on Hamilton, so when the ball gets to him, it's as a secondary ball handler. He's generally got an easier look at the basket. Purvis coming back in, you know.
Everybody's getting the lane a lot more. They're getting contact. Even Sterling Gibbs is actually like getting some contact. Adams getting like getting some contact. You're seeing a lot more free throws in these last few games, and actually like being able to make some plays from inside the 3-point line, which has been not a thing.
And that was something I wanted to bring up, that the added bonus to Adams' emergence over the last few games is that even in the worst case scenario, when nobody is hitting their shots, which we've seen this year, Adams can get to the line. He can get into the lane. If you need points on the board, he could at minimum do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And him being able to sort of, you know, freely move throughout the offense has really, you know, done what they needed all year, which is open the floor up for all the other options. You know, Purvis and Gibbs have been shooting the three well all year, and they just weren't really able to maximize that impact because when it was happening, they were not able to get to the foul line, or they not able to get the post guys involved. And they had to use so much clock to get those points, you know, all of a sudden, Gibbs and Purvis are so much more valuable.
I love that little elevator play.
Dead eye shooters sitting on the wings every time.
That little elevator play they run for Gibbs, which he can do now because he's playing off the ball, where you got it's usually Miller and either like Reimer or Nolan. I watched it when it was in the Cincinnati game where he comes around and they close the screen up and his defender like bounces off a wall of human. So he gets a couple of steps behind him. He's behind the 3-point line and there's a great shot. And that was not a play that was working 2 weeks ago.
Right. One of the incredible things about the post Cincinnati play of this team, when you look at both the Temple game and the Memphis game, Temple and this is from a broader perspective, but Temple and Memphis both staged runs at several points in the game, and you know, in both games we let them get pretty close, but then we closed it out. And I wonder if that Cincinnati win triggered almost a different mentality in this team.
The point that you made out was a good one, that Temple and Memphis both made runs, and UConn was able to withstand that. And I think that is going to help UConn against Colorado, a team that shoots really well from three, because you can assume that at some point Colorado will probably catch fire and hit a few threes and swing momentum their way. And, you know, if you told me a week ago we were going to play that game, I might not have felt as good about it, because this team at no point had showed that they had the poise to overcome that. And they did it time and again in the AAC tournament, which makes me feel like now that's something they can handle in the NCAAs.
Okay, now we're going to do an instant mailbag. Tyler, over to you.
When watching UConn NCAA tourney games, pants or no pants?
No pants.
No pants.
No. I mean, if I'm in a situation where I don't need to wear pants, wait, time out. When we say pants, like, what do we mean by pants?
It doesn't specify, man.
Okay. I'm not going to be sitting in my jockeys just because that's not that comfortable.
At Giletto poses this question.
I'm wearing sweatpants right now. This is my being at home wear. I basically come home and it's pajamas.
Hold on for the rest
of the day.
This is a watching sports is a fluid situation, and that's probably not good when you're talking about pants versus no pants. But you know, if the team goes
fluid, no pants.
If the team is going on a 20-0 run, your pants are off.
You're swinging them over your head.
The pants come off, and you're swinging them over your head. If the team gives up a 20-0 run,
soccer shit, isn't it?
It is weird ass soccer shit. Absolutely.
I say pants. Put your pants on.
I'm anti pants all the way.
I'm pro sweatpants.
I'm pro leggings because I'm a girl, but that's
or some kind of pajamas.
Some sort of comfort attire, definitely. I need to be as comfortable as possible. It could be a very stressful situation, and I like feel like loungewear is most appropriate. Unless I'm at a bar or like in public, then I would wear pants. But
if Rodney Purvis hits four threes on four consecutive possessions, I don't know that my pants would come off of their own volition. I can't control that.
I say pants. Wear your pants. I'll give you guys shout-outs, but we're just going to pull in a bunch of these. So Hedged Husky asks about Daniel Hamilton And
cool. Good,
Alex Dragas, who's at Goofy Kid Problem, all right, man, asked about Jalen Adams, and both of their questions are, now that they're playing so well, should we be worried about them heading for the NBA? I'm not worried about either of them.
No, I'm not worried.
I'm not worried about Adams. As far as Hamilton goes, one of two things is going to happen in the NCAA tournament, and I'm fine with both. First one is another miracle run to the Final Four, and Hamilton will play that well, and he will go, and he'll be a Husky of Honor with his national championship, and it's going to be beautiful. Or UConn will do basically what people expect them to do, maybe beat Colorado, either way lose in the first weekend, in which case everyone comes back, and they're a top team next year. I'm fine with either.
If any of the, for any of these guys to go, something incredibly good will have to happen, which is a trade-off I will make 100 times out of 100.
Exactly.
All right, so remember, every Friday you can go to adimeback.com. We'll answer three of your mailbag questions, similar to this, hopefully more insane. Literally, anything goes. We answer questions about cheese. Megan gave you a sangria recipe once. Ask anything.
I've drank a lot of bourbon. I can tell you all about it.
We do know a lot about food and alcohol also.
Yeah.
Like, collectively, we know a lot about food and alcohol.
Yep. Yeah. Getting back on topic a little bit, in terms of NCAA tournament seeding, one of the things I heard Jay Billis say in the selection show, and I agreed with him, was all these kind of mid-major teams have been told throughout the years that you've got to stack your non-conference schedule, otherwise we're not going to take you seriously. And a lot of these mid-major teams did that this year and did not get rewarded.
I want to make a quick point about that. And I'm going to talk about Monmouth, who I know Peter doesn't like. But they had some ugly losses, but what hurt them even more was that when they made their schedule and they scheduled UCLA, Georgetown, and Rutgers, they all turned out to be terrible, terrible teams. So beating them did not help them nearly as much as they thought.
I understand that, but then you also have a loss to Army.
Yeah.
Canisius, Manhattan, but Army?
Yeah.
Army never beats anybody.
Yeah, and, you know, you play in the MAC, like, I would overlook a bad loss because you're playing 20 games and 10 of them are on the road, but when you have more than that, like two or three, that's when it, I think, becomes a red flag, and just the good wins didn't outweigh the bad in the end, and it hurt them that, again, Georgetown and UCLA ended up being awful. They did beat Notre Dame and USC, so give them that.
Yeah, I mean, they got a couple of nice wins on there. And it, you know, it is what it is with the teams, with those schools. I do think some sort of adjustment should be made for the quality of the program. You know, if you're gonna play Georgetown, they should be like, all right, and you went and you played Georgetown at Georgetown, and you beat the pants off them. They won by 15.
Mm-hmm.
You get credit for that as though you went and played real Georgetown.
And their bench has come up with some pretty inspired celebrations,
I was hoping they'd make it just because I enjoy watching their bench, and I thought that would have been really fun. Russ, did you talk to people in Colorado about basketball?
Yes, I did.
What did they ask you about UConn basketball, these people in Colorado?
Oh, they asked me about Colorado's chances against UConn.
And what did you tell them? Did you troll them, or did you answer honestly?
No, I said they had a shot, and I told them what they needed to do. Basically, what I wrote in that How to Beat Colorado article today, I told them the opposite.
Russ, why are you just giving away trade secrets?
Yeah, Russ, God.
I mean, these aren't exactly secrets. Like, I told them if Brima and Miller get into foul trouble, that Colorado big man's going to have a field day. If UConn doesn't defend the three, they're in trouble.
So what do we think about Colorado? Are we going to beat Colorado?
We should. We're better than they are. We have a better offensive team and a better defensive team.
At this point, I trust Kevin Ollie in the tournament.
Undefeated.
UConn is talented enough to beat any team in this country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you had to play a 7-game series, you know, probably, sure, take Kansas. One game in March in a tournament, UConn versus Kansas. I know we always say, you know, taking programs past history into account for one game now, especially since a lot of the players weren't there in the past, is typically a bad idea. But I'm going to do it anyways and tell you that given their history, I would take UConn over Kansas in one game, especially with these rosters.
If Sean Miller gets a light whistle on Perry Ellis, that's the game.
If they can get to the free throw line, this is the best free throw shooting team in the country. They have got to make contact and get to the free throw line.
What if someone actually checks Perry Ellis' birth certificate before the game and they realize he's 98 years old and they don't let him play? That could just tip the scales in UConn's favor even more.
I was just going to say that they have a very similar roster to us. It's just that all of the players are a little bit better. They have like four guys who get a lot of minutes and are all over double figures, and they play the same positions. He's got two forwards and two guards. And then they have a bunch of, like, a shit ton of rotation guys who get, like, 10 minutes. And their skill sets are all very similar, but they're all just, like, a little bit better. So if we all have good games, and they all have, like, whatever games, we're going to win. And Kansas is good at having whatever games in the first weekend of the tournament.
In a tournament game where you're playing the second game in a weekend, and we saw that this is a team that has great conditioning, they didn't look tired after the first game against Cincinnati. I kept noticing hearing the announcer saying, like, oh, is this when UConn's going to start showing some fatigue, and going, like, actually, they don't look tired. And they didn't seem to look tired at all playing, you know, a game and a half and then two games in 3 days. And they are the best free throw shooting team in the country, which is hugely valuable in a tournament game, hopefully when you're getting to the free throw line at the end of it. So, I mean, it's a team I like in the tournament because of the nature of a tournament, and who the hell knows, man? It's UConn. Crazy shit happens.
So we launched a tournament challenge group on ESPN. You can search for it. It's a Dimeback. Three words, not all together like our Twitter handle, but separated. And we have prizes we're actually going to give out this year, which is pretty damn sweet. We're going to give away a... Should we reveal it, or should they be a secret? I guess we should reveal it, right? So we're going to give away at least one gift certificate to J. Timothy's, which is one of our favorite restaurants. We're going to have a Dimeback fun T-shirt that you can win, and some other third thing that we'll figure out.
Didn't we get a donation prize as well for the worst bracket?
Oh, yeah, and our friend Leaf and Yeast is going to give a six-pack of New England Brewery Sea Hag IPA to the owner of the worst bracket in the pool. So, you know, you being terrible will actually help you for the first time in your life. Go to adimeback.com, find the post there, or just search for us on ESPN. So you guys did your brackets. Who's in your Final Four?
I'm not answering this question.
Because what? You have Kansas in your Final Four and you don't want to be ridden out of town on a rail?
Yep.
What a dick. You're
out. Fire us.
Fire up the
every
trains.
All 2 years that I've been here.
And we haven't won a championship either of those years.
Fuck, wow.
This year's not over yet.
Correlation equals causation.
Russ, I swear to God, you better win the championship this year or else.
Me?
Yeah.
All right, I'll do my best.
So my
Final Four.
So go ahead, Tyler. I believe that you and me had the same. You and I had the same Final Four. So you
is
go
that
ahead.
True? So my Final Four, I have UConn, the University of Connecticut. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Heard of them?
I have them facing off against Oklahoma.
Yep.
On the other end, I have Michigan State versus West Virginia.
Yep. Same thing.
And I have UConn over Michigan State to win the national championship by a score of. 77-74, of course, obviously.
Obviously, everyone picks.
Not an animal.
I have UConn, obviously. I also have Baylor and UNC and Michigan State in my Final Four.
That's very similar to mine.
You have Baylor?
No, I have Oklahoma, but I also have UConn, North Carolina, and Michigan State.
I have three of those teams.
But I have UConn beating Michigan State 68-62 in the final.
Am I the only one who has Yale over Baylor in the first round?
No, I have that.
I have that.
I have Yale over Baylor.
Come on, you pathetic nerds. Do something good for me.
Let's talk about CBS's coverage for a second.
Oh, so, fucking
I chose not to watch it once those heroes at SB Nation leaked the entire bracket. I was
Heroes.
I never have to listen to Charles Barkley speak again.
But let's talk about the fact that they decide to patronize real college basketball fans with NBA guys who don't watch college basketball.
Who brag about not watching college basketball. So literally, we're here slumming.
So literally, Charles Barkley said these words when he talked about the Colorado-UConn game. He said, "I'm picking Colorado because all I watch is the Pac-12, and I think Colorado's pretty good." That's all he said. He didn't say anything else. He knew nothing else about either team.
It's no wonder he's such a terrible gambler.
Terrible.
I'm a terrible gambler.
But
I like that the bracket leaked like right around the time that Charles Barkley was playing with the touchscreen and couldn't fucking figure it out. That's what we were forced to watch while everyone was seeing the bracket.
But someone in the back room of CBS was like, "I can't take it. Here you go.
What a hero."
How fucking hard is it to have people who enjoy college basketball talk about this? Like, here's the thing. Instead of Charles Barkley and the rest of those guys, I would so much rather watch Dowster, Goodman, Norlander, and someone else talk about college basketball.
Bro, just give me Bill Raftery and a glass of scotch for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I just suggested Norlander, and I hate him.
But at least he knows what he's doing. He watches basketball.
He watches it.
He's definitely going to pick Colorado in the first round.
Of course.
Regardless, here's a guy he's been watching college basketball all year. He knows the game. Same thing with Dowster. Dowster does a great job, I think. But
Dowster's also a big UConn fan.
Yeah, we like Dowster.
Yeah.
Shout Dowster.
Shout Dowster.
Bud. It's actually preferable to watch ESPN get the brackets 5 minutes later and wait to hear Jay Billis and Carol Austin discuss it. And I don't need to listen to whatever's happening on CBS. It's better to just wait for the experts to actually start talking.
Real quick.
Okay, Saquon, Ohio.
Real quick, one more Instabag. I know that Mr. Koffel asked, what is your dream booth to cover a UConn game? And I actually tweeted about this. My personal dream booth involves Jay Billis, Doris Burke, and some generic person to call the game.
Sean McDonough.
Sean McDonough, sure.
Is the most generic broadcaster.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why you never even realize he's calling the game.
But what if it was? What if it was Joe D?
Why has this broadcast been enjoyable? I don't understand. Why am I enjoying this? And you're like, oh, McDonough.
What if it was Joe D though? Joe D.
See, that's not what I was gonna say. I was gonna say Joe D.
Joe D.
Joe D. Jay Billis and Dick Vitale.
The problem with that though is I don't know if Joe D can do a television broadcast.
He's done it. He's done TV.
But has he done play-by-play on TV?
Yeah, he's done. He used to do it. He used to do it for the Big East Network back in the 80s and 90s.
Okay. All right. Never mind.
Or 90s, I guess.
I just think he would talk over Billis or Vitale or whoever you have.
No, he played nice when he was kid. He does great play-by-play.
So I didn't even consider Vitale, but Vitale would be great. But I would almost...
I'd go Raftery over Vitale.
What about
I can see that both ways.
Raftery and Billis collectively over Vitale.
Great.
But the true answer is Jody and Rebecca Lobo.
Here's the thing. There are so many male commentators and color commentators who there are several women who are well far ahead of so many of the male color commentators of men's basketball. I mean, think about how much better Doris Burke and Kara Lawson and Rebecca Lobo are than Len Elmore. How much better are they? They're
1,000%. Infinity percent
better. I want to know about the Kara Lawson index.
Do you know why Kara Lawson's great and Len Elmore sucks? Because she does her fucking job.
Yeah.
Because when she shows up at the game, she already knows what she's going to say. Len Elmore has done no thinking about the game when he shows up. You can tell. Everything he says is the most generic crap. He reacts to... He has 8 things he says. He's like a pole doll.
Peter, are you kidding me?
That I was okay with. I mean, whatever. It's a fucked up moment. Things are fucked up.
You don't prepare for that.
I'm talking about every time a guy misses a 3-point shot, he's like, they're falling in love with the three. Could be the first 3-pointer they took. It's like he only can remember the last 15 seconds.
Another one and done. Oh my God, I hate him. He's the worst.
What if you replaced Leno Moore with just an empty cardboard box?
with like some sayings written on it.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to the A Dimeback Podcast. Don't forget to submit your questions for the Friday mailbag. And as always, go Huskies.